Hello, good afternoon. Thank you all for coming despite the hurricane that seems to be brewing out there. I'm very pleased to introduce our next speaker, Mr. Tom James. He's the current chairman and past CEO of Raymond James. In 1970, he took the helm from his father. The company was valued about $700,000. And fast forward to today, depending upon the stock market, which I hear isn't great, current value is about $4.5 billion. Tom James attended Harvard Business School and graduated with high honors. He is a past chairman of the Financial Services Roundtable, Securities Industry Association, which is now SIFMA, the Florida Council of 100, and current president of the Board of Trustees of the Salvador Dali Museum. He serves on the board of Dean's Advisors of Harvard Business School and the board of the International Tennis Hall of Fame, and is the chairman of the board of the Chichi Rodriguez Youth Foundation. His interests include tennis and golf. He loves to play the guitar, and I hear when he was in high school, he was actually in a rock band. His other passion is collecting art. In fact, the Tom and Mary James art collection, which is displayed at Raymond James headquarters in St. Petersburg, is actually one of the largest art collections in all of Florida. I'm pleased to say I've worked for Raymond James for 19 years, and I appreciate the conservative nature in which Tom continues to cultivate our firm. Without further ado, please help me welcome Mr. Tom James.
Thank you. Let me begin by congratulating all of you on your efforts involving students and being involved with economic education, because I'm a past chairman of the Florida Council on Economic Education, and I really believe deeply in trying to help students become more productive in society by getting them through high school and graduate, getting them into a technical school or into a college thereafter. And things like the Chichi Rodriguez Foundation do exactly that. They take students identified by the school board, the school system, in the fourth grade, who are already falling behind, usually because of single-parent families or no homes, or homeless-type students. And we take them on a 1-to-9 ratio of teachers to students and try to get them back into the mainstream by the end of the eighth grade. And we do that on a golf course where we built a school. So we also teach them after school about agronomy and about running pro shops and doing all kinds of activities like that. And Chichi was, you know, really supportive of doing something like that because he started as a caddy, as most of you know, and he wanted to give back to the sport and to kids. He believes a lot in kids. So Chichi is still engaged, although in the old days when we used to be able to raise $1 million with one golf tournament over a weekend because of all his contacts that flew in from all over the country, we can't do that anymore, so he got me back involved about 10 years ago to get local business golfers engaged in this process, and so we have a local board now, and we're continuing to raise a lot of money and I think doing a good job for those youth that we're dealing with. Gee whiz, I wasn't sure that I'd like to speak when the market's down 400 points. I made the comment this morning before the market opened that it looked like from the futures that the market was going to make an effort to give back all of the loss or all of the gain from the prior day, so that we weren't really finished like a lot of the talking heads were making a point of. This morning, that maybe we're going to have a V bottom and come right back. And, you know, V bottoms are nice things to talk about. They don't happen very often. So what I'd like to do, because of the environment we're in, is talk a little bit about the economy, what I think is happening both domestically and globally, which that happened to be what I studied. I'm a continuing amateur economist, so I spend a lot of time worried about these things. But more important, I have a lot of asset management experience and managed our Eagle Asset Management sub for its first 8 years until it got to be more than a hobby, and I hired Herb Ellers, who lives down here. I'm surprised he's not here at this meeting, as a matter of fact, who was one of the best managers subsequently in the country and helped us build a great asset management subsidiary. So I'd like to start by focusing on some of the things that we hear the most about today and make some comments. You know, interest rates have been with us ever since the downturn in 2008 and 2009, and the government has managed to deprive all of us who build up assets and then retired of any income by essentially keeping the interest rates near zero, which has made it hard for a lot of people who couldn't take a lot of equity risk to offset the opportunity to have made money from fixed income investments. So I've been for actually going back to a free enterprise solution in this market for over 3 years, trying to convince politicians and the administration to raise rates, not dramatically, but raise rates so that there were some returns for people, in the belief that interfering with the free enterprise system once you start is difficult to discontinue. And as we found out, I mean, this has really occurred. And we would have been better if we'd have started raising rates 3 years ago and gotten rid of all that QE2 nonsense a little sooner than we did, because no one knew how to unwind it. I mean, you know, we were in a very difficult situation from really understanding how that was going to affect the country. And if you think for a minute about the growth rate since the end of that downturn, it was obviously impacted by the fact we did so much damage to the financial system, starting from the real estate bubble. But the fact is, the economy was in reasonably good shape. It was never in the amount of in the U.S., it was never at risk once the financial system had been protected, for which I saluted Bernanke and Hank Paulson for doing a good job on the recovery, even if they didn't do a good job before it happened. So at least they got their chance for reputation recovery in the aftermath. So that's really not been a big deterrent to growth, beginning to increase interest rates. I mean, we could have gone up 100 basis points on day one. It wouldn't have made much difference to anything, in my opinion. So there's always an excuse for a politician to continue a subsidy. And they don't have the heart to either discontinue it or reverse course with the brakes. So it's very hard to get these things to end. And I have a great deal of confidence in the wisdom of a market that's comprised of all the pieces that our economy is involved in. So I would have done that sooner. What we see now with a market that, again, is a little frightening to people is that a flight to quality is causing people to put a lot of money into U.S. dollars and into U.S. assets. And as a consequence, we have very low rates, 0.91 on the two-year this morning. Obviously, very low rates, difficult environment. And we've seen this before. And for those of you that have experience in the financial industry, you understand that hedges are imperfect instruments, and they work pretty well, generally speaking, but when you have flights to quality, you actually can lose money on both sides. So it's not a great place to be in if you have a lot of capital at risk. Now, the government has argued for some long period of time and substantially lowered its estimates for what they said would be sufficient to begin increasing interest rates, and they added inflation as a prime test and went for the 2% inflation factor. If you forgive me, I take inflation statistics with a grain of salt because there's so many different factors going on all the time in the marketplace. All I know is our employees have a hard time keeping up with a 3 or 4% salary increase to be able to make do at the same purchasing power. So I have a great deal of empathy for them, and I think inflation's probably been a little higher, notwithstanding you could eliminate energy's effect on all this period with some of these statistics. And, of course, with the last move down 70% off our market highs, that's its own cause of a lot of disruption in the society, because it isn't just energy. It's all the other commodities that are coming down in tandem. Plus, it's all the radiation that is created by a price decline like this. So when we look at energy, it's not a very pretty picture. And what was adding a lot of employment in the United States, especially in large employment states like North and South Dakota, we now are back letting people go, and at a pretty rapid rate, and most of the rigs are being laid up on the ground. I've been through this before, so this didn't surprise me a whole lot. I used to be a general partner in the energy field, and commodity prices are difficult to deal with, and for those of you that have operated in those businesses, you know of what I'm speaking. They always go up too much and then down too much. So you get the standard deviation is way above standard. That's caused a lot of disruption, and it actually is a break now on, even though we've got lower gas prices and more dollars to spend domestically on the consumer side, we have this disruption going on from these lower prices radiating through the system. If you look at manufacturing. Actually, manufacturing is probably a little better. We're starting to attract businesses back into the United States that had departed a long time ago. And China, that was the beneficiary of a lot of these jobs, along with India and some of the other smaller emerging countries, we essentially have reversed that to some extent, and even China is losing employment jobs to places like Vietnam and Indonesia and other countries that have lower wage rates, because the wage rates in China have gone up considerably for a good length of time now. Then we've got the dollar strength as a result of this flight to quality, and the fact that our economy is doing better than other economies. There are really good reasons, the institutional stability, et cetera. It's kind of a recurrent theme that we have whenever risk-oriented things start happening in the economy. So that hurts our exports, but of course the low price of oil helps our imports, and a lot of other things are cheaper abroad than they are here. Because of the strength of the dollar, so our imports are favorably impacted on the trade deficit. So there are a lot of offsetting factors there that I would tell you keep us in pretty good shape. We have, since the 2008-2009 time frame, had difficulty trying to reestablish capital expenditure levels with the kind of growth that we have typically had, which would have added another growth factor into the economy today. And Part of that's understandable. You want more liquidity on your balance sheets. You become more sensitive to any kind of risk, and heaven knows that we have challenges every day, whether it's terrorist activity, whether it's financial problems where you don't expect them, that are occurring. So that side of the threats to both the economy and the stock market are always present. What we see companies doing with their money today, we're having a surge in transactions, 1,575 acquisitions of over $1 billion in the last 2 years. That's $7 trillion of investing in productive assets, but not net additions to the productive capacity of the country. In fact, a lot of those acquisitions result in a lot of cost cutting and unemployment. The fact that we have gone through this kind of a period and managed to maintain 2% type growth is actually a positive, I would tell you, because there are an awful lot of albatrosses. I've only mentioned a few so far, but I hate to see all that money leave companies for stock repurchases and not being reinvested in whatever their businesses are to add products or improve products or enhance service. So it's a little unfortunate, and sometimes I'm on the losing end of these discussions in my own board meetings. So I can tell you that certainly a change, being a long-term investor, having owned stock in my own company for over 50 years, I've found that the benefits of owning your own company and making it grow and be successful are more rewarding than selling out and doing something else. So I'm actually quite happy with this. Junk bond yields. We're reading a lot about junk bonds today. Why are we reading about junk bonds? Well, the fact is that with low interest rates, the attractiveness of junk securities with higher yields is kind of obvious, and what happens is the spreads are forced to narrow, and they became so small that in our bank, the typical A&D loan or land loan was actually paying whatever the base rate was plus 250 or 300. It used to be 700, just to put that in perspective, so that the risk premium for those kinds of loans was a lot higher. So fortunately at our bank, the rest of management and I managed to stop A&D and land loans in 2006, and we didn't do any condominium loans soon thereafter. So we actually survived the downturn in the banking industry without any difficulty, and we didn't have one corporate loan loss during the downturn in traditional corporations because it was focused on real estate and higher risk financial institutions. And that just isn't normal to have just those sectors involved in downturns. And the concern comes now is the next recession, right? I mean, we're gonna have another recession. I don't know precisely when it's gonna happen, but the risk is a lot higher after 7 years of economic and market increases. So, I think that's something for you to pay attention to. And with unemployment at 5%, as I mentioned, it's not going to get much better when you throw in statistics like 292,000 hired in the month of December. And you can talk about seasonal adjustments all you want, but I would tell you that seasonal adjustments occur every season, up and down those adjustments. And the fact is, we're pretty healthy in terms of additions, given all the other factors I've mentioned, like disemployment in energy. So it actually is a good time, but you know, now people are worried about the credit quality, not just of energy and other commodity companies, which are at risk. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. If $30 prices stay around for 6 months, almost all of the forward sales and other hedges will be off in the energy field, and we'll lose at least a third of our E&P companies and a lot of related service business industry companies to bankruptcy or early sale at very low prices. So not a very healthy condition, but one that's not new to the energy field, by the way, having been here before. And you don't expect these kinds of prices to last for a very long time because the risk of inflation is there and energy's in demand. It's just an oversupply at the moment. And as we stop drilling and activity decreases, it will eventually get back into equilibrium. But these histories go on for a long time, and it is very possible that they stay depressed and cause a lot more damage. So there's some reason to be concerned. On the other hand, you got consumption still being relatively strong. You see it especially in housing and autos. My friend Mike Jackson is having a heyday here this last year and went way out of his way to say that last quarter was aberrational and that he wasn't going to be able to keep up the sales rate that they have, and was trying to lower expectations for the street on CNBC when he spoke this time. It's the first time I've ever heard him do that before. And the fact is, he's right. It'll be harder if you continue to have a downtime. We're back up at new highs in terms of auto sales. And actually, GM and Ford look fairly attractive with their yields. I see GM raised its dividend again. So what do I think about the market now that I talk about this economy? The market's selling at 17 or 18 times earnings before this decline started at the 1st of January. And, you know, normally it sells between 14 and 16 times earnings. So we were at the high end of a range largely because there weren't attractive alternatives, right? And as a result, I would tell you that we had a lot of downside risk. We probably were in the 30 to 35% downside risk, even if you still believe we're in a bull market, which I probably still believe, but it's getting closer. That's why I probabilize these things rather than just make a conclusion of black and white, because it's not very helpful to do that. And all this volatility we have in the market signals tops, usually. So, you know, I ask you all to not be surprised by a market correction. And I'd rather have it be shorter rather than longer, because our business falls off a lot in down times. So the factor is, the truth is that it's really... I think better to have these things over with. They don't usually last too long. But better to have the correction and be back on a slow growth course again if we're lucky enough to reach that alternative. So I think the market may not do very much this year, to be frank. And I heard people talking this morning about 6% growth in corporate earnings. Boy, there's very little chance of that in my view. I think that... They'll be lucky to be flat. They were down this last year. The last quarter was off 3.8%. So, you know, the fact is, this creates a lot of opportunities. How about that? You know, that half empty, half full glass. What I would tell you is that as I look at REITs now, which I actually exited about 2 years ago when they started selling totally on yield and not on underlying net asset value of the real estate. I did the same thing in the energy field 6 months before the market started down, just because supply was increasing every day and nothing had happened to the price. Sooner or later you hit that hair on the back of a camel, you know, and all of a sudden things collapse. And that's really what was going to happen. That's one of the advantages of having made a lot of mistakes in the market and getting old. And I think all of you will join me in the thought that not very many of those things are good, getting old. But the fact is, that one is good. Wisdom is good. Experience is good. And So I think REITs are attractive. I especially like them in apartments, hotels, and industrial REITs, not so much in malls, because unless you're in the premier mall business, you're losing revenues in your malls from your lessees. They're not increasing their business because of IT net type purchasing every day and growing. Whereas the key ones are still doing okay. I would also say, and I usually do this when I'm with clients. I make some comments that have to do with investing. I still like healthcare. Especially in our business, is small and medium-sized companies in the United States, and we have a very good reputation in research, especially in those areas. And you know, I like things like American Surgical, ICU Medical, Sagent Pharmaceuticals, United Health. I like the big banks because most of the problems are gone. They're making a lot of money, good rates of return. Look at JPM's recent earnings. I know my friend Mr. Diamond is coming to speak to you all, so I consider myself a warm-up act for him. But buying Citicorp, Bank America, and JPM assures you of, I think, a pretty steady growth in earnings and increasing dividend payout ratios back to levels that existed before. So I think that's a good place to be. And then just generally, I would make comments about, you know, finding dividend-oriented securities. I mentioned AT&T this morning to our clients, and I use that as a cash surrogate. And I own that stock. It's got a, you know, 5.7% dividend. And then if I need cash again, I don't use it for emergency cash, but I use it for cash equivalent kinds of investing. It's been very good to me. And so far, I've got about a 15% buffer doing that. So I'm okay, even if the stock goes into the 20s. I would still have far outperformed that 25 basis points, which generated 2 basis points of my cash deposits. I would tell you that our firm is going to share increases in interest rate with clients. We are not keeping that money like some of our competitors are doing. I like things like a little company called Iridium, which is one of the satellite companies that is doing all forms of telecommunications. Finally, the space shot program is back on track, so it's a interesting small company to own. I like Verifone. It's got dividend too, but the company's cheap. A lot of stocks are down, unnaturally down. So I would commend you to consider some of those. I wouldn't blow out all my portfolio. I don't do that. I'm a long-term investor. I don't believe in that. And so I wouldn't be there trying to trade whether it's going down 2,000 or 4,000. I just buy good companies when they're attractively priced. And that's paid off in spades over my lifetime for my clients and for me. And I hope many of you have that experience with your own investing. But I want to leave you with a thought related to my first comment, which is the great thing about our country is that we have a great free enterprise economy. Many of us nostalgically look back and say, those damn kids, they don't work as hard as we used to. And they don't walk 9 miles to school either. But might have been a slight overstatement in some of those memories. But the fact is that our system still works, our economic system, sometimes in spite of government. And if I were to say another frictional point on these corporate earnings, it's the imposition of a lot of unnecessary regulation after we had the financial downturn. About 85% of what was spent was waste. The new rules shouldn't have been there. 15%, you know, like increasing capital rules, decreasing leverage ratios, kind of simple concepts. If they'd only enforced them in the first place, we might not have gotten in trouble. Where was the government when down payments went to 3% and there were no terms and conditions in mortgage loans? Did you tell me that? How can you have pools of securitized instruments when nobody can look through them and see how those loans are doing? I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff we need to fix in the system. But we do have a great marketplace, and I have confidence whether the growth rate is not there this year or the stock market goes down another 10%, that there we're still going to make money. And if we get together in 12 months, the light will be clearer at the end of the tunnel, or things will already have righted themselves based on the history of the length of these kinds of corrections. I want to thank you very much for participating with you today. I've enjoyed it.
Very good. So we have a little gift for you, Tom. One of our members produces these books, table books on Naples and Marco Island, which we hope you and Mary take back and enjoy. And now I'm going to turn it over to Alona for questions, which we have a lot of.
Uh-oh. No questions on the Buccaneers, please.
We're just going to talk
about it. I'm kidding, actually. We can talk anything you want. It's okay with me.
All right. So as Shelley mentioned, we have lots of questions. I tried to pick out a few on different subject matters. So what would be the impact on servicing our national debt as the Fed continues to raise interest rates?
I actually think it would be positive if we raised them some, okay? I think that we're not giving a fair return on capital, which distorts all kinds of things happening in the environment. Our problem is, as I said, our elected officials, remember it's our fault, that they don't have stomach for these hard decisions. I mean, otherwise they'd have been balancing budgets a lot better than they balance budgets. And this time it was led by a Republican president who didn't pay enough attention, and then magnified by our current president. And, you know, that's a problem. We need to work on that problem and do something about it. And that's why we have candidates that don't seem like they should be candidates, because everybody's so sick and tired of not seeing our politicians not accomplish anything towards problem areas. So that's, you know, that's why I would add that, you know, I think doing the right thing is good. And we need to have a little stronger belly for some of this stuff than we do currently. To be frank, they need to put on a 4% tax on me, because that was one of the last Hillary notions. That's okay, as long as they do the rest on the other side. I don't care. I want it back in better equilibrium.
Okay, you brought up politics, so here we go.
Oh.
Okay, which presidential candidate has the best understanding of economic policy? And at the same token, who would be the best for the stock market?
Who'd be the best for the stock market? The answer to either one is not Donald Trump.
Well, I left that card over there. It's good or bad. The question was, good or bad?
What I would tell you is I'm a big supporter of Jeb Bush. And I'm a big supporter of Jeb Bush because I think he's one of the two best governors we've had during my business lifetime of 50 years. The other one was a Democrat, Reuben Askew. And so this is an apolitical comment about how many problems they dealt with, how hard they worked on them, how objective they were, and how unfazed by influence peddlers they were. You know, the one thing I remind people about Jeb is he lined out more items in the budget than any prior governor ever did. So he was trying to get rid of all the fat during that period. And he worked harder than any, well, I think Reuben worked harder too. I think that's what it takes. It takes hard work, it takes managing experience and some understanding of how you create a team dedicated to achieving ends. And I think we have a couple of governors who have some experience in addition to Jeb that would be good candidates. I think Ted Cruz understands foreign economic policy. He's very bright. He's more conservative than I am. But, you know, I think he'd be okay. I'd rather have one of the governors. It's really different managing something. Those of you that know that have done this understand how much ability it takes to manage a business as big as a state or a country. And if you got to do that, you got to be the right kind of personality and the right kind of communicator. And in my own case, Jeb is a far better communicator than W. So that's my own view.
And who would be the best for the stock market?
Anyone else other than the two leaders currently.
There you go. All right. Can you comment on the financial impact of the Department of Labor regulation on Raymond James and the financial services industry as a whole?
First place, you don't like to have regulators that don't understand what they're regulating. It's unbelievable to me that the SEC didn't take control of this process and do it. And I'd have been very aggressive if I were with the SEC to make that happen. They really understand, you know, what costs ought to be, what the good investments are for people to have in these programs. It would have been a far better solution. The DOL, even though it's been beaten on by our industry, by even the administration is beaten. I mean, they're off on their own zone, you know, trying to say you can't be a commission broker that's just more regulation. We're not regulating registered investment advisors now. Do you know that? The average time of regulators visiting, in between regulators visiting RIAs is once every 10 years. Brokers are far more regulated. Now, I say this, and I would tell you almost all our brokers are registered as salespeople and registered investment advisors. We always thought we had to make decisions in the best interests of our clients, and we were perfectly happy to handle small IRAs and all those kinds of accounts for very low compensation, even though it made no economic sense, because we thought it was good for the system. And we thought it was good for future investing. You know, maybe not my generation, but hopefully the generations following. And half of the money that you all have, especially while you were working, is in qualified plans. And you have to manage the money in conjunction with personal assets to make the right allocations and make the right decisions about what risks people should be taking in conjunction with their affirmation. So I would tell you they've made a mountain out of a molehill here, and it's going to increase costs. That's what all the surveys say, by the way. So I think it's too bad is what I would say. Is it going to hurt us? No, we already can do either one now. And I'll tell you what will happen. The small accounts that we handled before will now have a fee for the small accounts that we weren't charging fees to. And we'll make money even when there are no transactions. And look, if you're doing a grandchild's trust, you might only have to buy one or a few mutual funds and forget about them. So it's okay to pay front-end commissions. It's a lot better than paying a fee every year on the assets. So look, you gotta make the best decisions for the clients, and you really need to do it from a holistic standpoint. That's my response, and I just think these guys are awful. But the Consumer Finance Board is worse. So when they start going into all these companies, you have to understand they're trying to regulate all already regulated enterprises in addition to some that weren't regulated. And unless they stole some of the people, which they did, from other agencies, they don't have much knowledge in these areas. And they're coming to visit our bank. And they've scheduled 6 weeks. What are they going to do? We have one of the best bank records in the industry. I have no clue, except it so happens it's in February.
All right. So you've read the headlines. We've all read the headlines about the amount of money that is flowing from active management or mutual funds to indexes. You know, the death of the manager. Can you comment on what you think about active versus passive management and what the future looks like?
That's a good question. Based on recent history, I would tell you it's very clear with respect to large cap stocks that you can buy indices and get good, very good records, and that's why a lot of our people use Vanguard and other very low load funds for those purposes. Less clear with respect to small and medium-sized companies, and I would tell you you probably would do better with a professional selector. All of the money that I'm not managing myself is managed by our investment managers, and I pay the same fee structures that you all pay for that kind of investment. So what I would tell you is I believe that there are good stock pickers, there are good asset allocators, there are good sector rotators in the business, and if you get involved with those investors, you'll do well. And you don't have to go to hedge funds to do that because there's so many that don't charge hedge fund type fees. And in fact, the average performance of hedge funds after fees is far worse. The average. There are always a few that you read about in the Wall Street Journal that had an outstanding year last year. And they don't tell you a lot about what happened to them 2 years earlier or 2 years afterwards when they got killed. And so, you know, I would tell you, and we have hedge funds. We offer them. Our small cap manager, Burt Boxen, has a tremendous record, and I invest money with Burt Boxen in his hedge fund. But you can't buy funds of funds. Double loads? Are you kidding me? The first load is too big. You don't need two loads.
Okay, so you've commented that you think the economy is doing fine. Not exciting, but fine. What do you see moving into 2016-17? Everyone indicates 2017 is going to be a better year in the stock market. What would be the leading indicators of that?
That's because it's far enough out, people won't remember what they said. That's what it is. I can't tell you that. I can just tell you that if the market, if the market goes down another 2,000 points, I'd tell you we're going to have a great rest of 16 and 17. I mean, that's a safer call, right? The fact is, I don't know. I do know that 5 years from now, I think we're going to find out that keeping our portfolios was very well paid. So that's my attitude. I'm a long-term investor.
As a miner in economy, what do you see pushing our economy into the next recession? What would push us over that cliff?
I was a minor in philosophy and a major in economy.
There you go.
Economics. That's after I gave up on physics and mathematics after 2 years because I was having to go to too many labs and I was interfering with my rock and roll gigs. So that and I didn't want to teach and I didn't want to be a research scientist, and actually that was the right decision for me. I'm better doing what I've done for the last 40 years than I would have been at that. I'm better at that than being a rock and roll musician too. But it's okay.
Okay. All right. So this is a personal question. So there's word that you're building an art museum. Is this true? When did your passion for art begin? And is it true that you funded your early art buys with money that you earned as the lead rock singer of a band?
Yes. That's true. I would go out with my now wife, Mary, about once every 2 or 3 weeks on Sunday afternoon, and we would go to an art place like Rockport, like the Cape, like MIT Graphic Studios or Wellesley Art Department or the Boston Museum School. And we'd meet the artists, and we supported young artists that we thought had a lot of talent, and we bought art that reminded us of wherever we visited. So here we are in New England. My wife came from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and here I am, a Floridian from the flat country, so I loved all that snow. I loved the difference in the even the waterfront there as contrasted to here. And so I collected things like that. And to this day, whenever I go to a town, I visit galleries and museums, and I try to find an artist who they think is up and coming that does a good job of representing the local area. So that's what started me. And so my collection grew to 2,650 pieces, of which 1,700 are Southwest and Native American art. And I'm going to take the best of that from an investment and historical perspective, and I'm going to put it in a museum in downtown St. Petersburg in between the Dolly Museum and the St. Petersburg Museum of Fine Arts, close to the Chihuly, close to our new, also being built, museum for crafts, which will feature furniture for, you know, 1800s and before. Furniture. So we're going to, my goal is to try to make St. Petersburg an art destination, and Dolly helps that a lot. We have 400,000 visitors a year, and 200,000 of them go there as a destination, come there as a destination. And it's absolutely unbelievable. If you're ever on a board of a charity, find a museum that has so much money in admissions and purchases in the store that they don't need donations.
All right, looking at the next 6 months, are you a bull or a bear?
I think I'm pretty flat in the next 6 months. But if this market keeps going down, I mean, I'm starting to pick things off now. I mean, as I told our clients this morning, some of these stocks are down 30% and 40%, and they don't really have a whole lot of things that have changed in the companies, and the fundamentals still look good. So, and they have strong balance sheets. I mean, when I look at an energy company, that's my first question: how long can they survive? It's kind of like it used to be for biotech companies.
Are there any good reasons to own bonds?
Not right this minute. If high yield bonds go up a little more, it's still a little early. There have been some great papers published by our competitors, actually, on the high yield market. I've got three of them with me that I'm reading, just because I know if we get to 700 or 800 basis point spreads, and you can find good companies that don't make a triple B rating only because of their size, that you ought to buy some of that debt, because that debt's going to get paid off and the company's ratings are actually going to increase over time if it's a company like that. So I would take part of my equity money and do that, and I'm still going to carry large cash balances and very short-term bond management. That's what I do.
What are your thoughts on munis?
They're the most attractive of the bonds currently to buy. So if you're going to buy some bonds, munis are attractive. And, you know, we're the eighth largest originator of municipal bonds in the country. And it's a lot of very good rated small communities and small other kinds of administrative bodies that are municipal securities that are attractive. And it's, gee whiz, you can make pretty good returns from that.
Well, thank you, Tom, for being with us today. We appreciate it. If there's
My
one
pleasure.
Thought you would like to leave us with, what would that be?
Help someone else to achieve your success, from advice about what you would have them do in business.